This is now... The customer isn't always right. It's Wednesday, 8 o'clock. You're listening on 107.5 FM, WRUU.org, or you can listen to us on WRUU.creek.fm. You can catch all the old episodes and just get caught up with stuff. So now I'm going to start like I normally start. I'm going to do a bar recap for the week for me, since my guest is not from down here.
Who are
AJ.
You?
AJ.
Yes, sir.
This is my boy from New Jersey. New Jersey represent all day, every day. We don't have any time for your BS.
There's a special place in my heart for people who were raised in New Jersey but got out. Because when you grow up in New Jersey, everybody always talks about getting out, and very few ever do.
It's true. And like, what is it? I read an article not too long ago. It talks about how like it severely stunts your growth mentally if you don't leave your hometown.
Yeah.
And that includes like your home state. Like it's, if you don't leave the area where you grew up, like it significantly stunts your growth, like I guess mentally or psychologically.
Totally.
But anyway, so my week, bar scene is the same. It's kind of weird, kind of busy, kind of not. Typical Savannah, there was a couple shootings that ruined some of the things, and we're on the verge of some kind of, was it winter vortex type? Ice, winter is coming. Yeah.
The Night King marches forward, yeah. Like General Sherman.
Yeah, so everyone's getting all freaked out, and I'm sure toilet paper will sell out and all kinds of things, but that's kind of the week. Everyone's just kind of preparing for that. We got a lot of people coming from the north to the south just to kind of get away from all that, so that's pretty much it, but we're going to take some time to do some station promos, and we'll get to it in 1 second.
Did you know that you can access our incredibly diverse programming anywhere in the world in real time? Simply type in WRUU.org in your internet address bar. And while you're there, check out our schedule of incredibly diverse programming. You can check out shows by day of the week, an hour, and even print out a weekly schedule. Simply click on the scheduling tab at the top of the page and follow the prompts. Then click the play arrow and enjoy the show.
This is WRUU, your radio station. Each of our hosts is just like you. We're your friends, your neighbors, and your co-workers. We're Windsor Forest Radio and Ardsley Park Radio and Liberty City Radio and Radio 4 and from every other part of Savannah 2. Like you, we can't keep going without covering expenses. So please help us by donating whatever you can. Go to WRUU.org and support your local radio station. Any amount is welcomed. Thank you for your support of WRUU.
Do you enjoy the music of Broadway and movies? Then, well, That Showbiz is the show for you. I am your host, Jeremy Friedman, and each week I bring you music from Broadway, movies, and entertainers, along with some anecdotes, information, and commentary, all based on a theme. Please join me every Sunday at 1 p.m. for Well, That Showbiz on WRUULP, Savannah, Georgia, 107.5 FM, and streaming at WRUU.org.
To celebrate Telfair's featured exhibition, The Art of the Character, highlights from the Glenn Close Costume Collection, which runs from October 10th to February 15th at the Telfair Museum's Jepson Center. The Jepson Center Auditorium is featuring Glenn Close's film Fatal Attraction on Friday, February 13th at 6 p.m. More information can be found at www.telfair.org.
Anyway, all right. So it's a little bit different. So normally we've got customer service type people, and like I think over time, as I mentioned in my special, like I'm going to be transitioning to just kind of getting anyone who deals with people just in general face to face, because everyone's going to be a customer at some point, whether it's a corporate setting or whether it's from behind a counter. Mm-hmm. I mean, so you're always going to have to deal with someone when you're exchanging a service of some sort. So. All right, AJ. So, what do you do? And let's talk about your deconstruction from tall to
yeah, man. If you ask me what I did, like every year of my life, I might give you different answers. I've done a lot of things. I now would call myself a life artist.
Or Renaissance man.
Exactly. There's a German word for that. It's called Lebenskünstler.
Oh, I like
and
that.
And the Lebenskünstler is the man that, like, looks at his life as an artist would. So whatever I'm doing, whether it's making a meal or making a building or making love, whatever I'm making, I'm doing it with thought and intention and a little bit of magic.
Yep. Yes, that's accurate. Because I always wonder, like, do you ever wonder what people who aren't creatives do? Do you ever wonder?
They admire creatives.
Or they try to defund them. I mean, but still, yeah. I can't imagine going home and not having, like, a creative hobby. Like, what do you do?
Yeah, it must be
math? You just, like, do math in your free time?
A lonely, like, kind of life? I don't know. So but, like, at the same rate, like, you talk to these kinds of people, right? And, like, we need those kinds of people to do our taxes.
Right. Someone's got to do it. Yeah.
It's like we need those kind of people just as they need us.
Right.
And like
symbiotic.
Everybody loves music. Everybody loves art. And
I mean, even the people who think they don't.
Right. Like, they love something.
The car you're driving is art.
Yeah.
The house you live in is art.
Engineering is art.
The clothes you have on is art. Like, so don't tell me that you don't like art because you do, clearly.
Right. You got to like something. You got to love something. Right. And as an artist, there can be a lot of pressure in the world to be successful, to produce, to, you know, whatever. And, right, like, it's easy to feel the weight of that and get bogged down by it and have to remember, oh, I'm a creator. I must create. Like, even if I don't feel inspired in every moment, like, sometimes I got to trudge through the ish to get to a masterpiece. And like,
yeah, see, I'm a big, like, I know a lot of artists enjoy the process.
Mm-hmm.
I hate the process. I just want it to be done. Like, if I have the thought, I want it to be finished.
Yeah, it's hard to sit down to work on something if I can't finish it in that sitting. Right?
Yeah,
and so then I just don't do it.
Way, yep.
And then you talk to these people that don't have those skills, and they're like, what are you doing? You can't waste your gift. Like, we need this. We need you to write a bunch of, like, so that you can.
It's okay. Keep going. You're good.
We need you to write, you know, a bunch of cringy stuff to be able to produce the thing that is going to inspire someone, right? Because as a Lebenskünstler, it's a way of looking at life. It's a way of looking at the world and what you notice about people and how people carry themselves. So then when you go to produce art, whether it's a song or poetry or a story or whatever it is, a sculpture, like, you're telling a story, and for it to be effective, you know, for it to be received by someone, they have to connect with some part of that story. And there's things that bind us as humans, like, you know, heartbreak and inspiration and wonder and dreams and all these things that are, like, innately human. And if you're able to tap into that correctly and somebody's like, wow, I get something from that. Like, that's what our gifts are for.
Right. There's, like, a difference between, like, specifically in the guitar world. Like, I've met a lot of people who, there's people who know how to play, right? But then there's your students, and then there's your guitar players. And, like, there's a lot of students who they can play a piece perfectly. They can look at it, play anything, but when you ask them to write, they can't do it.
It's a totally different game.
It's a totally different game, and I feel like sometimes with art, like, I feel like there's a lot of, like, innocuous art out there, you know what I mean? Where it's like, oh, that's photorealistic and that looks great, but, like, if you put that same picture of 10 different artists, I can't tell the difference.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Whereas, like, you see a Van Gogh, you know that's a Van Gogh.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So it's like, I get what you're saying. It's just like, you gotta really pour yourself into it to be... It's you're birthing. You're birthing an idea. Like you're making it. You're taking it from your head and putting it out. But anyway, I digress. Back to what we were talking about.
Yeah.
So you went from.
Yeah, I went
corporate life.
I went to college to get a degree, and I started in high-rise construction in New York City, and have systematically deconstructed my life to, you know, jump down the levels of risk and responsibility, you know, in the industrial, commercial, and residential sectors. And I was a handyman, a nomadic handyman for a while. When COVID hit, I lost my job and I just started traveling the country and was met with mishaps.
Okay, so immediately, real quick.
Yeah.
How does that work? Is there like, I remember we talked about it the last time I saw you.
Yeah.
It's like an app of some sort that you use when you're traveling around to do that kind of stuff?
Sometimes.
Or are you just like looking at a paper? Or are you just like, how are you like getting these jobs?
I mean, I had to figure it out on the go. Okay. I like built out my camper van, right, during the pandemic after I'd been laid off. And I got my severance package, and all of a sudden I had all this money. So I'm like, all right, well, the world shut down. Like, I'm going to go see it.
Yeah.
And I got an hour down the road, and my transmission exploded. So that cost $4,000. That was my food and gas budget for the trip.
Yeah, life is what happens when you're making plans.
Yeah, right? So I had a choice. I'm like, I could go back. I could tuck tail and, you know, whatever. Or I could try to go across the country and work as I go. And life was really teaching me to slow down. It was like, you thought you were going to do this whole great West Coast, Washington to San Diego in 4 months. Like, you're going to make it to Colorado and you're going to love it. And you're going to spend 4 months in Colorado. And I put some ads out on Craigslist and I met some people. And so jobs came to me organically through word of mouth. They came to me through Craigslist, and then I looked into other apps and stuff that like gives you job leads. And I worked it out for a little bit, and it gave me the chops that I needed to be confident in, like, okay, I don't need much to live. You know, I can go from place to place, really enjoy the nature, immerse myself in these different cultures, meet characters along the way, and keep track of the stories, you know, because that's what's most important to me in life is stories.
Right. So yeah, dude, I feel that 100% because like that's like one of the things that I learned over time, like after getting out and doing all the different things and like taking the unconventional path out through life. It's the stories. I feel like that's what we really have as humans. That's like the thing that kind of like really teaches us and binds us and like puts us together is like, I feel like if everyone could take time to talk to each other, like we'd really find out that, yeah, there's people, like actual people, those things that you pass every day, those are people, you know what I mean? They have their own lives and they have their own things. And it's cool because as a person, you're not going to experience everything. It's just not. It's not possible. You could live 100 years and you're not going to experience everything. So it's good to talk to people and really get a different perspective on life.
Yeah.
Especially when you're out there, like in the country. I drove cross country from Jersey to San Francisco, and like just in that week span, seeing like, holy cow, like it's a totally different place. Like,
totally.
Everything's different.
Geography is a really big characteristic in like where people settle. And how who decides live. To live where, and like, yeah. So as the terrain changes, you're going to find all different kinds of flavors. Of
right. People. I mean, like, I remember going through like South Dakota and like Nebraska and being like, holy cow, everything's flat here. Like what? I could see a storm from miles away. Like this is wild. Cows everywhere. Like, what is this? Yeah, I get that.
Yeah.
Okay, so now you're, you know, it's pandemic, you're traveling around. Where do you find yourself then?
So I slowly made my way around the country and kind of kept that lifestyle going for the next, you know, 4 years, where I kind of do 6 months on, 6 months off and leave my camper van out on the West Coast. So that was my West Coast home. And I go out, do stints, you know, live in places that are obscure, like Slab City. You know, we could talk about that for 2 hours. Like, but yeah, it kind of reframed my worldview and like how much of the world was accessible to me. So I was, you know, I live a very simple life. I keep my overhead and my bills low. And so with my skills of being able to build stuff and fix houses and I can work anywhere and I can charge premium for my labor because I'm pretty good at it.
Yeah.
And so I got to travel internationally a bit and found myself volunteering for music festivals, building art and stages. And that really hit the crossroad of passions in my life.
So when you're saying you how did you get into that avenue? Like, granted, you do like going to the shows and stuff. Like, were you just at a show and you were like, hey, I like that thing. Who's doing it? Like, volunteer. What is, like, what's going on here?
Volunteer.
But I mean, even that, like, so, how do you, is there like a, I don't know anything about the festival scene in that regard. So it's like, were you just like a thing and then there's like stuff that pops up, like emails or something where it's like, hey.
Well, I mean, my answer to this is going to be unique to me because I am
everyone's
a weird magical creature and falls into, oh gosh.
It's okay.
Stuff falls into my lap all the time, right? So I love going to music festivals and, you know, it's nice to be a participant or an attendee or whatever and enjoy the music that you're there for. But going to volunteer is A, like you usually get a free ticket, so it helps with costs. But really, like, you get to get in ahead of time and you get to see how it's prepared. And like every festival, no matter how much true intention is put behind it, it's like a very complex operation that you can like make analogies to being like a tapestry or a macrame or a ceremony or a ritual. Like, there's so many different little things happening so that when the people show up to have a good time, everything is prepared for them to have a good time. And being a part of cultivating that magic is super special. How did I get into it? Through, like, I guess God speaking to me through music, right? I found a new genre on Spotify that I liked. It was like, had a lot of shamanic drum beats and like tribal symbolism and stuff, and it just really struck a chord with me.
It resonated with you, yeah.
I started listening to it, and it introduced me to all these new artists. I love finding new music and breaking out of my comfort zone, and so like that's what I've been listening to for about a month while I'm working, right? And then Instagram, I see one of my friends who's a visual artist was saying that they're going to this festival in Costa Rica, and it looked pretty cool. And I looked at the lineup, and a month earlier, I wouldn't have known any names on that lineup. But I look at it and I'm like, oh, this is a festival that's curated for this new thing that I'm being exposed to. But the tickets are crazy expensive and blah, blah, blah. So I look through the website, I see I can volunteer, construction crew. I'm like, solid, let's do this. And it was very weird because, like, I've done this sort of thing since then. This was my first experience with it. And, like, usually there's a gestation period where, like, you know, people on the other end are doing their things and you'll hear back in a matter of weeks or months or whenever they go through the list of people. But it wasn't even like 2 hours or something, and I get an email saying, hey, we'd love you to come. And I was like, whoa, all right, we're doing this. And there was certainly something there for me, you know.
That's
and
cool.
I love the fact that I've engineered my life in such a way to be able to say yes to those opportunities,
right?
Because when an opportunity presents itself to you, like, and it's something you really want to do and it aligns with your passions and stuff, you want to be able to walk through that door, you know?
Yeah, you want to be able to say yes and be able to put your whole back into it.
Totally.
You know?
Yeah. I put my whole back, body, mind, and spirit into this. And, you know, when you show up as a volunteer, if you got to, like, you're a pair of hands, right? If you got to work as a shovel, you work as a shovel. You dig hole, you clamp. You
got to start, you know, from the bottom, man, a lot of times, too. That's the problem, too. And I hate to be this, like, old man style, but it's just, like, everyone's too, like, real too used to this, like, point-and-click life we have where it's, like, instant. Everything's instant. You know, like, people won't realize, like, you don't start at the top. You got to take... You gotta eat crow. You know what I mean? You gotta do it in order to get yourself up to the top. You don't just like, hey, you're the boss now. Like, nah, this is not how it works, you know?
Well, and there's a huge element of humility to it as well. Because, like, someone with my career path, like, could think in that situation that, like, oh, I do come from the top. And, like, I've managed multi-million-dollar buildings.
There's a difference between confidence and arrogance.
Yeah, and in these kinds of situations, like, if you come in with that kind of arrogance, and you're like, I have all these skills. Like, a lot of times a project manager will be like, okay, great, you go dig hole, because like that, they're running their show, that's their operation, and if you have too many opinions, it can screw up their flow.
You don't want the too many cooks scenario.
Exactly. So like a good manager knows, okay, you know, like this person's telling me like they got skills, so like I'm gonna keep them at arm's length.
Yeah.
So I kind of have to wait for the invitation, right? And I'll dig holes all day until somebody asks me if they have skills.
Right.
Somebody asks me, hey, do you have skills? Now they, as a manager, are being the best manager they can be, and they're unlocking the full potential of their crew.
Right, right.
And when I'm like, oh, you have no idea how many skills I have.
Because not every situation is a kick the door open, take control thing. It's a lot of times you got to just lie and wait.
Yeah. And if they don't want my skills, that's okay. I'll just give them labor. That's what I'm there for. Yeah. That's what I signed up for. If they want my skills, now we have the keys to the kingdom and we can do anything.
It's about being a team player. The starters aren't automatically starters. You know what I mean? You don't just come into the league starting. That's just not how it works sometimes. So you got to work your way up, but I get that. So in that regard, let's talk about, because I still got to kind of, you know, keep it real on here. So, like, what are your, like, best, like, interactions as far as, like, you as a service provider having to deal with someone who is requiring a service from you? Like, funny, touching, doesn't matter.
Good interactions with people who require a service from me.
Initially making them the customer.
Yeah. Well, I could talk about a lot of different industries, but I'll keep it to art because
that's where you are now. Yeah,
it's where I am, and I think you know, I have an interesting perspective.
It's a unique perspective, yeah.
On this, so like a lot of my clients have been artists themselves, mm-hmm. right? And I'm an artist and a builder, but I've been hired by artists as a builder. So they have the vision, they make the design, they get the award of money to make their thing. And whether they're like an architect or an industrial designer or whatever, like maybe they haven't actually physically created something larger than the size of a table.
Right.
So now they have to make something that's like large scale, 6 tons, structurally engineered. And they're like, I need somebody that knows how to do this. And that's where I come in. And I've had some really wholesome interactions, and I've had some interactions that are very tough to navigate.
We'll get to those.
Yeah, artists are not inherently easy people to deal with.
Right.
But it can work out really well, and I think the symptom of this is working out really well is that I feel empowered and appreciated. And there's not a whole lot of money in this game, so it's a labor of love. And when I volunteered for that project in Costa Rica, like having like the story arc for my experience at that event go from digging holes to like being super appreciated and given parts of creative control, you know, and being given extra responsibility to take over, be a manager, and like make this person's vision come to life. And that gives me a lot of satisfaction.
It's fulfilling. It's fulfilling at any job. When you go and you are super like restrained by whether it be upper management or whoever, and then you get to that point where you're like, okay, they're respecting what I'm saying. They're actually listening to what I'm saying. And then you have like, you know, carte blanche, kind of just do whatever you want. Whatever you want within the confines of the rule, obviously. But like, it's good. Because, you know, you're like, ah, finally. Like, they're finally understanding. Like, I'm not here BSing. Like, I'm actually doing good work. And like, yeah.
And if you work in a job where you're getting paid, like, you should get a bonus.
Right.
Right? There's not enough bonuses going out. I worked in the corporate world, and I would do my job and my coworker's job and my boss's job and get like crumbs, you know?
Yeah, a lot of the rewards in that world for doing a good job is doing someone else's job. Like, oh, you did such a good job here.
So we're
doing this person's job too.
Put you to work.
Like, no, I want that person's money if I'm doing their job.
Right.
But that's a whole different thing. But yeah.
I mean, in the art world, like, this guy didn't have much to give me, but he tried to give me from what he could, which was, hey, let me talk to some of the organizers and see if we can get your volunteer pass bumped up to a staff pass. And that'll get me more meals and more showers and take care of me because I did exemplary work.
Like, right.
That makes me feel seen. That makes me feel appreciated. And really, like, welcomed me into this community of artists where now that I'm in it, like, I'm getting calls for different projects, and it's a limited group of people that want to build really, really big stuff for these events and, like, sacrifice your time, your sweat equity, travel around the world to build all this cool stuff. And, like, hopefully it gets appreciated, and hopefully you have a plan for what to do with it afterwards.
Yeah, yeah.
But the money doesn't always work out, you know?
Right.
And would I like to get commissioned by a city to build a sculpture that's there forever, and it makes me feel more connected to the community? Sure, that's a goal. But really, you know, the ultimate goal is to, like, follow your passions, you know, follow what you feel is your life path, and do everything you can to your highest level of excitement. And when stuff gets hard, you don't write it off. You don't get angry at it. You look at it as an opportunity to grow.
It's a learning experience.
Yeah. My mental switch from, like, why is this happening to me to why do I need this was, like, revolutionary, you know? And just thinking,
what am, like, I supposed to be learning here as opposed to why is this happening? Like, woe is me. Switching to, okay, this happened. Why did this happen? Let me figure out how I can... If it's me, let me figure out how to break this pattern. And if it's something else, let me figure out how to get away from that.
Mm-hmm.
And those are life affirming like experiences.
Yeah. And you can be feeling like you're on the top of the world and it can all come crashing down in a moment. And, like, you know, I was recently in a relationship where we were building some really exciting stuff together. And it was like, wow, this is it. This is what it's supposed to feel like. And when the train slips off the tracks and it's just like, wow, was I really that far off from my life path? No, I needed to learn something. I needed to learn something, a hard truth about myself that I didn't realize.
Yeah.
You know, something about my childhood, something about my conditioning. And until I learn, I was never going to reach my fullest potential.
Right.
I was never going to be able to connect with other people through my art who go through that same thing.
Right. I'm a firm believer in, like, you are where you're always where you're supposed to be at all times. Don't ever think that you're not. Like, you're always where you're supposed to be at all times. If you believe in that kind of thing, I believe it 100%. Like, no matter where you are, you're there for a reason. Even if the reason is nothing.
Yeah.
You're there. You know what I mean? And you're supposed to be there for whatever.
Yeah, because it's your life.
Yeah.
And your life is personal to you. So no matter what you're thinking, no matter where you're standing, no matter who you're with, whatever, if you like it, if you don't like it, good, bad, like, those are just words.
Yeah.
And language is tricky. It trips us up all the time. We use words to label things, but, like, you could hold on to a resentment for something that you thought was bad, and then 10 years later you have an epiphany of being like, oh, that's why I needed this.
Yeah.
Thank God I had that experience.
Like, it was, like, terrible at the time, but thank
God.
And
then you switch that label from bad to good.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, how much energy did I waste holding on to that label for so long?
Man,
like, let's not waste our energy. Let's just embrace our life. One of my recent projects this year was my first temple. So in the Burning Man world, temple is a tradition. It's one of the large-scale art pieces that burns, so it's very temporal. So you put a lot of energy into making something grandiose, and then you set it on fire.
You watch it burn to the ground.
Watch it burn.
I don't know if I could do that.
it's tough, you know, and, like, and people write on it, right? People write their names, they write their hopes and wishes and dreams, they write their pain and sorrow. One lady wrote about a baby she had lost and one of the terms of her pregnancy. Like,
it's a way of symbolically, like, kind of just letting things go.
Yeah. And, like, the fire is what consumes these feelings and, like, transmutes it from the physical world into the spiritual world. That's the idea.
Yeah, that's a similar thing to I talked to someone who I knew who was like a really good songwriter. And what she was telling, like her thing was like, you should write every day and you shouldn't try to sit and write like a story every day or something like that. But like just your thoughts. She's like, understand that there's limited space inside your head. So if there's something that's bothering you, write it down on a piece of paper and then it's gone. It's out of your head. It's done. Even if I'm a visual person. So like, she's like, even if it's like all these bad thoughts or whatever it is, like bad experience, bad story, whatever stuff that you're just trying to like, not really. You just like, this doesn't need to be here anymore. Write it down, crumple that piece of paper up, toss it in the trash. You're good. It's like, you have to like, sometimes people need to physically actually see these things disappear in order for them to let go of them.
Totally.
And I feel like that's one of those cool things.
And there is a special kind of magic that happens when you spill ink onto paper or wood or whatever. Like that's how we cast spells. And that's how we, you know, write our existence. And this hits home for me because, like, out of all of my, like, skills and arts and stuff, like, I feel like I'm a writer. That's my core thing. Yeah. I want to be a storyteller. And I don't write enough. I don't journal enough. And I am always beating myself up over that because it's hard for me. It's like, it's an emotional experience. So I have to have the energy to be able to spill that ink on paper like it's my blood, you know?
Listen, I'm going to give you some advice. Note apps in your phone.
Yeah.
Are clutch for this reason.
Oh, yeah.
Like, if something happens, I'm like right in there. Bang, I got to write this down because.
Yeah, voice recordings and like.
Anything.
I've just been amassing all of this in journals and voice notes and everything. So now I have to like, you know, get an AI assistant or something to like sort it all out for me.
Yeah.
But, you know, so with the temple tradition, you know, you have all these people collaborating on your art piece, right? Like you make the structure, you're essentially providing a pretty canvas for other people to sew their magic into.
Right.
And you feel that, you feel the energy of the collective and what people bring into it. Both the people that work on it and the people that write on it, like throughout the week, it gets heavier and heavier. Yeah. And this was a piece that I made last year for the event that I burned it at this year. And I took it around to 6 different events throughout the year. And it was my labor of love.
That's
awesome. I packed it on top of my truck and I set it up and I took it down, set it up, and I introduced it to hundreds of people all over the East Coast. And they all wrote their little things. And at the beginning, people are like, oh, you can't burn that. Like, it's too cool. It's too special. Like, I don't want my words to go away, whatever. And then by like events 4, 5, 6, people are like, oh, yeah, like, it's time to go. Yeah. And I couldn't keep this at my house. Like, it was heavy. And so we sent it up in flames. And the name of the piece was Amor Fati. This brings us back to what we were talking about before, which is, it's a Latin stoicism that means the love of your fate. And it's not general. It's very personal. It's not the love of the idea of fate.
No, it's your not, personal journey.
Yeah, it's your love of your fate and my love of my fate and this idea that the universe conspires in our favor. And, like, pain and suffering suck. You know, they're not fun.
No, it's not. I feel like the universe, like, we're talking about with the open doors and stuff like that, right?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like the universe constantly sets you up and opens doors for you. And you have to make the choice. The universe is not going to make the choice for you.
It's all about choices.
But I feel like when you do make the wrong choice, the universe hits you with a consequence for making that wrong choice. To try and get you to understand, like, hey, that wasn't the right choice. Like, you had the right choice there and you made the wrong one. So just understand that next time when we set you up for this, don't do this.
Well, we're labeling, like, the wrong choice. Like, what is the wrong choice?
I feel like...
Maybe the only wrong choice is not making a choice at all. And people who just don't want to do anything with their lives.
Right. There's people who are always like, oh, what would you do? Like, what would you change if you had a time machine or if you go back? And honestly, if you would ask me 10 years ago, I probably would have had a bunch of different answers.
Yeah.
You ask me now, like, nothing. I wouldn't change anything.
You can't. You have to love it. You have to love it.
I would not be me without any bit of that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I mean, if you take one little bit of that away from my past experience, I'm not the same person.
Exactly.
So, like, I'm comfortable with who I am at this point. You know what I mean? You have to, I think you have to slide in. You know what I mean, you have to slide into yourself, like, you know, like a comfortable pair of socks or whatever it is. Like, you really have to get in there and be comfortable. Like,
yeah.
Until you can be in that scenario, I don't think you're gonna enjoy
right
much.
And if you're walking around with socks that like have a seam in the wrong spot and it's irritating you with every step and you can't think about anything but how uncomfortable you are, like, take them off and go barefoot. Like, strip your life down, figure out what it is that's aggravating you, you know? Like, oh man, this is gonna be an emotional anecdote, but we're talking about people, right?
Yeah.
And people get into our energy, and some people like your energy and they want to stay forever. And like, as an empathetic type person, it's in my nature to want to stay forever and like share my gifts with people who appreciate them. But like, when you're dealing with someone, if there's like a breakdown in communication and it's like a small thing, but it's always there and it's nagging at you and it's like interrupting you from being able to communicate effectively, I feel like it's like a pebble in your shoe.
Yeah, right? Definitely. I feel like if you little things become big things to a point when you don't discuss them.
Yeah.
Any kind of ship, relationship, you know, friendship, whatever it is, requires an obnoxious amount of communication.
Yeah.
Like, to the point where people are like, oh, you're over communicating. Like, no, I'm not. Like,
yeah. You need to.
I need to. Like, I don't care if you feel like I'm being obnoxious. I need you to understand that, like,
yeah,
this is where I'm at. This is what I'm saying. Like, when someone's like, well, what did you mean? I'm like, I chose my words correctly. Like, I did, there's, like, what I read it at face, take what I said
yeah
at face value, take all those words. That's exactly what I meant. There's yeah. no.
And if you don't understand it,
ask me. Yeah.
Yeah. Sit on it for a bit. Wait until you do understand it, and then we can talk more about it.
Exactly.
But we can't talk more if you don't understand me or try to meet me where I'm at.
Or if you're thinking that I'm hitting you with some, like, hidden meaning.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, which I'm not doing. Like, if I'm telling you something, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Telling you directly. If I'm not telling you something, that means, like, I've just got nothing to say. But I'm not going to tell you something
yeah.
just to tell you or just to hear myself talk. Like,
but, yeah, I mean, whether you're in a relationship or a friendship or involved with somebody at work,
yeah.
like, this is about customers and clients and yeah. stuff. Like, we have all kinds of relationships. And if there's a breakdown in communication, if there's a rock in your shoe, and you ignore it for long enough, like, the person who's wearing the shoe that has the rock in it, in this analogy, is not you or the client or the customer. It's the relationship.
Yeah.
The relationship is the person
it's
in this analogy.
Yeah, it's right? Moving away, yeah.
And then, like, you let it go too long, and, like, both of your consciousnesses are in this person's head fighting about what to do with this rock in the shoe, and, like, one person wants to address it, and it's like, hey, let's stop. Stop. Take a moment. Take a moment. Address the problem. Let's just address it properly. And some people are rational, and they're like, nah, I got a little cherry bomb here. Let's just obliterate it and blow it up so that it doesn't work anymore. And I had this instance where it was like, okay, well, let's at least take the shoe off first. No, we don't have time for that. Like, we have to address it now. Well, if you put a bomb in our shoe, then we're going to hurt ourselves.
Yeah, we're going to wreck our feet. It's going to be like, worse than it was before.
Stop. We're going to hurt ourselves. We're going to hurt ourselves. Nope. Put the cherry bomb in there, blow it up. And then it's like, ow, oh, my foot hurts so bad. I need to get a bigger bomb and blow the rest of my foot off because the pain of these tattered remains is too much for me to bear. So they get a bigger bomb and they blow it off, and then you're screaming and you're like, oh my gosh, looking at the tattered remains, you know,
like
of,
a stump of a leg and stuff.
Yeah, you know what I well mean? Now we can't go any farther. We can't walk anywhere.
We can't do anything now. Yeah,
it's now blown up, and I wish maybe we could have stopped and taken the shoe off and addressed the pebble, but you know, it's about this communication, right? If
yeah.
one half of your brain is saying, stop, take the shoe off, and that's your boundary, and that boundary is not respected, then, like, you can't continue. You can't keep walking forward.
Yeah.
You can't expect the other half of your brain to start respecting you out of nowhere.
Yeah.
You know, it's...
Yeah.
It's a tricky business. Yeah. And yet we live in a world of people where we need our relationships to be successful, to collaborate, to make art, to do business, to make money, to keep society, you know, progressing. Like, we need to learn how to work together. And it's amazing, honestly, how far we've come when we all still have a lot of problems with each other.
Shoot, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous, like, to think about how much further we could be along if people, you know, there's always the problem with humans, like greed, you know, all these kind of weird things that, you know, kind of push the dark side and kind of hinder things and kind of gatekeep things. And like,
yeah,
you know, it like you said, it is amazing, like, how far we've come considering how terrible we are to each other. You know what I mean? And it's wild. But I think, you know, over time, maybe not in our lifetime, but things will level out at some point. We'll either not be here or things will right itself. But time only, you know, time will tell. And yeah, we won't be there for it. And that's fine. I'm okay with that.
See, I've come to terms with that as well, but I have a hankering that we will see it in our lifetime, because things are changing
they're changing pretty rapidly.
But like, the rate of acceleration for how they're changing is also increasing at an accelerated pace. Right. So you have like two exponential functions multiplied together.
Yeah. I don't mean to be negative, but I also just feel like it's going to get a lot worse before it gets a lot better.
Oh, it has. Yeah. I was literally talking to Braden about this last night after we came back from your karaoke. You know, we're standing on the street, got a few drinks in you. Yeah. You just had a great night, but like, you know, you just need to kind of talk it out with your best buds.
Yeah, yeah.
That was the topic of our conversation, was, yeah, things need to get worse before they get better. And people have all kinds of gripes about politics and the state of the world today and whatnot, but like, nobody realizes that it's still pretty cozy, you know, like, we still live in a place where we have lots of rights and lots of privileges and lots of access to, you know, physical needs being taken care of, you know, and there's places in the world where they don't.
Right.
And so they can't even work on their emotions.
Right. Like, it could always be worse. Like, thank whatever you want to thank, the universe, God, whatever it is that you, whatever to. Just be thankful that you woke up. There's people who don't. You know what I mean? Like, you know, like, tomorrow is never promised, ever. No. You know what I mean? So just waking up is like a miracle within itself. So that's good too. And like, yeah, we're always going to have our gripes. You know what I mean? We're always going to have our things. But like, you got to kind of just leave things better than when you found them. And if you don't, like, what are you doing? You know what I mean? Like, you're just kind of, I don't know. It's rough. All right. So we kind of got the overall of that. We don't need to talk about terrible people. But, you know, we kind of get the idea. So let's move on to some of these advice questions here. So I think you kind of answer why you still do it or why you do it. You know what I mean? Like, it's a general labor of love. So we don't need to really get into that. But, yeah, like, for anyone new who's taking a similar journey, like, what advice do you have for them?
Volunteer. Start at the lowest level you can and do your best, be humble, try to learn as many skills as you can along the way, and you will meet some really awesome people. Like, I have met some of the greatest people along the way of becoming a sculptural artist, that are inspiring and supportive, and a lot of them, you know, may not have the time of day to really, like, carve out an intimate friendship with people. But, like, if you want to be that person someday, like, get on a team and demonstrate your worth and be helpful and humble and just, like, how can I be of use? I got two hands.
Yeah.
What can I do? You know?
Yeah, I think the learning never stops. It's, like, one of those things that people are very, like, it's, like, a massive misnomer in life.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, yeah, you get to a certain point. Like, you don't have to, like, no.
If you think you've learned everything,
you're wrong.
You're dead. You're a dead person. Yeah. Like, the day that you die is the day that you stop
learning. Yeah.
Learning, stop searching for truth. You become completely content that, like, you know everything, or you achieved everything. Like, the savor of life is lost.
Yeah, I mean, the people who claim to be the smartest people in the room usually aren't.
Oh, yeah.
So
the smartest person in the room is going to be the person that says they don't know anything.
Yeah. Or yeah, or it's just sitting in the corner. It's like observing, just watching. Yeah,
exactly.
All right. So for any... let's see how I can phrase this. So for any, because clearly it's not like customers, but like for any people who are trying to, you know, observe these things that y'all are doing, like what advice do you have for them as far as like their treatment towards you guys and your process?
Describe the person again.
Like if it's just someone who's like, you have an art piece up somewhere and someone's walking by.
Yeah.
You know, and they want to talk to you about.
Okay.
About, you know, about either purchasing a piece or just like what does this mean, or like, and you know, their interaction with you as the artist, like what advice do you have for them
in how to approach someone like me?
Yeah.
Interesting question. If you are really and truly inspired by something I've created and you want to commission something, you want to buy something, you want to hire me for something, you want to pay me money, and you say it, you know, some kind of verbal agreement, like I intend on hiring you for this or whatever, like or you know, I need work done on my house, I need a deck, right? And I know you're an artist, but you build decks too. Yeah. And so I know you're going to do a good job because you're very detail oriented.
Yeah.
So like, and I've got to pay somebody to do it. I'd rather pay somebody that I know and I respect and will do a good job. And I trust you. I want you to do the work. Don't do that. don't make a promise that you can't commit to. If you don't know what the price is, you know, like I'm an artist. My time is very valuable.
Yeah.
And so like, don't approach me with like promises to buy anything. Like I was just walking down at the riverfront today. Right. And I saw an artist who was making paintings and I was enamored by it. And I didn't think I could afford it because I'm like, I want to pay this guy what he's worth, 'cause he's a great artist.
Yeah.
And I don't think that's in my budget right now, but I spent a lot of time dawdling there, and another lady came up and she was like, oh, I love this. Like, you know, let me go, like get some money from the ATM or whatever. Like I'll definitely be back. But like, she didn't come back. I spent 20-30 minutes talking to this guy and I did buy a piece.
Nice.
It really spoke to me. But like, yeah, be about your word. Like, don't say you're going to come back and not come back. Say like, hey, I appreciate your art. This is really lovely. Like, I wish you the best.
Yeah, yeah. Saying you're going to pay for a piece is like, in my job, it's like backpats and good jobs. Like,
yeah.
That does nothing for my bank account.
Like, no, it doesn't.
I know I'm doing a good job because I'm still working here. So.
And it's honestly cruel, yeah. Right, to an artist, because it like, unbeknownst to you, it like... does something in our minds where it's like, ooh, I could have future income.
Yeah,
and for somebody who doesn't subscribe to the normal societal paradigm and doesn't have a regular paycheck, like that could be really important. So like, instead of talking about money or intentions or whatever, like if you really like the artist and you do want something or whatever, say like, hey, do you do commissioned work? Yes. Okay, cool. Would you provide me with an estimate or a design or something.
Be serious.
And, yeah, be serious about it. And if you know, if it's out of your price range, just say it.
That. Yeah.
Just say it. So I don't have to spend time like wondering if I'm going to get a job in these next few weeks or not, you know? Yeah. And if it's too much,
say that.
Negotiate.
Yeah, maybe that's the thing. Yeah.
Like I'm not going to undercharge for my labor, but you don't know what my situation is right now. So maybe you could get a really good deal if you offer something. And if it's too low, I'll tell you it's too low. And it's no sweat off either of our backs.
Right.
But don't make empty promises.
Right, exactly. And then I guess the final thing, since we're, you know, I don't really need you to give advice for coworkers, because that's just kind of it's all volunteer and people who are like just in and out of there.
Well,
I mean, if you have some, let's, you know, rip it up.
You'd be surprised. I mean, I like working on large scale art is not a one-man job. Mm-hmm. And I've had to carry a lot of the burden myself for some of these projects, but you're always working with people. You're always working with other artists. And like, artists are tricky to work with. Like, we're all very opinionated. We all have different visions. And collaboration is not always easy. Yeah. Like, when it works well, and somebody with a different skill set, like, you're casting your vision, right?
Yeah.
And so you're like painting a picture of this world for somebody else to play in, essentially. And when they say like, ooh, could it be like this? And it's something you've never thought of, and it makes your idea better. Like, ooh, that is the creme.
That's the best.
That's true inspiration.
Yeah. And that's why I don't really generally like, when it comes to music, I don't really generally like writing alone.
Yeah.
Because it becomes like an echo chamber. I'd rather have someone else there who thinks differently.
Totally. And if it's your project, like, it's okay to say, no, that I appreciate your input, but that doesn't really fit with the vision of my project. Right. But like, don't discourage them from offering. Right. Yeah. Because maybe one out of five changes your piece in such a way that like it totally transforms.
Yeah.
And like, if they didn't feel comfortable sharing with you, you know, even if they're not a musician, even if it's just like, hey, sending a demo to a friend to say, listen to this. Like, what do you think?
What do you think about this? Yeah.
We need that. We need that. We need to be careful how we communicate to make sure people feel empowered to give us hard criticism.
Right. Hard criticism, but not negative.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, you know, it's one thing to say, I don't like this, and then offer nothing.
Right.
But say, like, I don't like this because.
Yeah.
You know, but like, if you're saying, oh, it's bad, or this, that, a third, it's like, well, you're not really helping.
You can say, this may not be my personal taste.
Right. You're just telling me that you don't like it, but that's not what I was asking about, you know? Cool. What else?
Yeah. Getting other people's perspectives is super important. And it can go very wrong, too. Like, you get a lot of creatives together who all have a way they think of doing something, and, like, things can get hairy. And so you have to be able to take a step back, take your shoe off, assess the gravel, and say, okay, like, do we have the communication skills to keep working on this? Because there's no guarantee that, like, through the process of making art, we're going to get better at it.
Yeah,
you know, we have to make a commitment to each other. We have to honor our word. We have to honor other people's word. And
just like with everything, it's reps, man. The more you do it, the better you get at it.
Exactly. And you can't respect somebody.
That includes communication, people. The more you do it, the better you get at it.
Yeah. But good communication, too.
Yeah, not...
If you practice bad communication...
Constructive communication.
Yeah. I mean, like, there's good books on it. Like, Nonviolent Communication is a great book. Like, if you are dedicated to the discipline of nonviolent communication, you will communicate so much better to people who are easily triggered or defensive or whatever. And that's everybody, including ourselves. Why we invent stuff like nonviolent communication, because, you know, we get tired of not being able to communicate effectively with people. And it
becomes frustrating too.
Yeah. Like, I'm just trying to talk to you, but something about how I'm saying or what I'm saying is disconnecting us. And like, it's taking us away from the goal that we're both committed to.
Yeah.
You know, so let's do better. Let's learn about ourselves. And like, it always starts with yourself.
Yeah.
You know, you can't teach anybody to do something if you can't teach yourself. You can't respect anyone. You can't love anyone properly, fully, until you do that for yourself.
Yeah, it starts with you. Overall, it starts with you.
Always.
Yeah.
Always. If anybody ever tells you that they got a problem with the world and they're pointing fingers at like, you know, they're controlling society and this person and that, and they're projecting. And that's why, no, like, we chose this.
Yeah.
We have created the world that we live in, us, the people, the humans.
Yeah, now we got to fix it.
This is our dream.
Yeah.
This is our nightmare. Yeah. This is whatever it is, but it's because we did it. We have to own that. And if anything's going to change, we first have to change ourselves.
Yeah.
And then we can work with other people who have changed themselves and be like, okay, what kind of world do we want to live in? How do we dream that together into existence?
Yeah. All right, AJ. Shoot, man. It's been good.
always,
dude. Excellent time,
Thank
man.
You for having me. Thank you for giving me,
dude, it's fun.
You know, space to share my thoughts.
Yeah, and dude, I like these little conversations. And like I said to people, I'm going to try and transition to more just anyone, like, kind of interesting stuff, just because that's how you learn. That's how you learn how to be a better human. That's how you learn how to just exist in society. So,
yeah.
AJ, again, man, awesome to see you.
I appreciate you so much. It's always good seeing you.
Trying to get some other heads from up north on this too, so
yeah,
get some more people in there. But yeah, so this is The Customer Isn't Always Right. It's 107.5 FM, WRUU.org. You can listen on WRUU.creek.fm. And if you're trying to get on this show, you can hit me up on Facebook, The Customer Isn't Always Right Talk Show. And just send me a DM and we'll figure it all out. But I'll catch you all later.